First, if you have siblings, having a healthy relationship with them can be a great source of friendship, a support system in tough times. It can even help with mental health in old age. But not everyone feels warmly toward their siblings, and even siblings who mostly get along can run into some rough patches through the years. Our next guest says there's a lot you can do to maintain your sibling relationship, no matter if you want to be best friends or just there to help each other when needed. Jeff Greif is a professor at the University of Maryland School of Social Work. He's the author of many journal articles and 14 books, including Adult Sibling Relationships, published in 2016. Jeff, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Well, you and your colleague had this book come out a couple years ago, and I understand you found that there wasn't as much research on how siblings get along as a lot of other family relationships. Why do you think that is?
Seems to be that a lot of therapists have been trained in looking vertically at relationships, first of all, parent-child relationships, and secondly, at couples' relationships. So this, what I call horizontal relationship, a sibling relationship, tends to have been ignored until the last 20 or so years. But as people live longer lives, they're going to need their brothers and sisters longer than ever before, and this is the longest relationship that we have. We are with our siblings longer, usually, than with our closest friends, and certainly longer than with our parents and our children and our partners.
And I think, Jeff, the ideal is that, well, your siblings, of course, you're going to get along. It's a natural relationship, no problem. But you write that it can take work. It can take some effort. Do we need to kind of recalibrate the way we think of that?
Yeah, we sort of have this Rockwell-esque view that everybody's going to get along every time they get together at Thanksgiving or at some other holiday. And in fact, many siblings that we interviewed, and we had survey data from over 350 siblings talking about 700 plus sibling relationships. While most people said they were close with their siblings, when you dug a little bit deeper into that, alongside the affection that many of us feel for our siblings, there's also a tinge of ambivalence and even some ambiguity, and we can get into that, you know, further if you wish.
Yeah, what are some of the things that lead to that ambivalence?
Well, of course, and I have an older brother and sister, I want my brother and sister to do well, but not as well as me. I cheer for them, but I was aware, our parents are now deceased, but I was aware growing up that there was always competition between us, and there's nothing wrong with good, healthy competition. But I would often be upset by things they might say and do. We have millions and millions of interactions with our siblings over the course of a normal lifespan, and the odds of all of them being loving and supportive are pretty slim. So there are often things that are said. Maybe every listener can remember something negative that they heard from a sibling at some point and hold on to that, and that maybe gets privileged more at some point than even some of the nicer things that have happened. So ambivalence would be a normal type of reaction, and we are trying to, Mike Woolley and I, my co-author, are trying to normalize this, that don't expect yourself to always have affection for your sibling, and be comfortable with the fact that having mixed feelings is a pretty normal thing, even with those that we are close with and whom we love.
Even in a great sibling relationship, I mean, you go from usually living in the same house to living in different places, maybe different cities, you have your own lives. Is there a natural tendency to just sort of drift apart, even when you like each other?
Well, the normal course of events, at least in America, is that we grow up and we're supposed to separate from our parents in early adulthood and from our family and establish our own relationships, our own identity. And we're usually able to do that, establish our own lives, until we have to come back together with our siblings to take care of ill and dying parents. So in theory, I could have ignored my siblings for a number of years, but all of a sudden, as our parents aged and became sick, we needed to come together to figure out what to do about them, and that's where some of the stuff that maybe we had all swept under the carpet had to be sort of unswept again and studied to make sure that that wasn't affecting the care that we could give our parents. Parents should know that if their adult children get along well, they're going to be taking better care of those adult parents. So there's a lot hanging on us trying to figure out how to do these sibling relationships as well as we can.
Talking to Jeff Greif from the University of Maryland School of Social Work, talking about sibling relationships, how to maintain them, how to build healthy ones through the years, even after we don't live in the same house anymore. Jeff, you mentioned, you referenced earlier the perception, maybe the reality, that some kid in the family was the parent's favorite. Mom liked you best, that kind of thing. How do siblings on either side of that navigate that in later years?
Well, one of the things we talk about in the book, and this is really difficult sometimes for both the children and the parents, but one of the things we talk about is that it's no fun being the least favorite, and it's also no fun being the favorite in many times. If that favoritism comes with it, if what comes with the favoritism is a certain anger or resentment from your other siblings, or if you're favored and you feel it comes with some unspoken obligation to a parent. So while, of course, parents have long relationships with their children, the more they can balance them out and try and show as equal a love for all their children as they can, I think the better off they will be. And sometimes that favoritism that is in childhood continues on into adulthood. Healthy families can sort of look at that and say, "Oh yeah, we always knew that Susie was mom's favorite, and it was just funny. We used to joke about it." That's a healthy reaction to it. But in some families where there's more dysfunction, that sort of favoritism can take on a more sinister or a more dark nature and cause the children to become angry with each other.
And you mentioned the sibling relationship is, just by the sheer math, probably the longest relationship a person who has a sibling is going to have in their life. That can be great. It can be a really long time to nurse a grudge or a grievance, too. How can a sibling kind of triage, like, what can I let go? What do I need to bring up and talk about? Is there something that maybe I can't forgive? How do we start to sort that out?
Well, that's a very complicated and important question. Part of it is going to be what do you, the aggrieved sibling, want to achieve? A lot of people look at their siblings, consider their siblings, and realize that they are not going to be able to get that much closer to them than they are now. So the narrative they may have to say to themselves is, I'm going to make an attempt to get closer, but I'm not going to try that hard because I don't think it's going to work. I think part of the question is, do I want to think of myself, if I want to be closer to my sibling, or if I'm angry at a sibling, do I want to think of myself as somebody who is capable of reaching out to somebody else? Or do I want to think of myself as somebody who has tried and I'm not going to try anymore? It hurts too much. I'm just going to quit on this. So part of this is, what is the narrative that we want to have in our own lives? And hopefully, sort of dysfunction in one's relationship with one's sibling doesn't bleed into dysfunction in one's relationships with one's own partner and children.
I don't want to focus only on the negative here, Jeff. What are the benefits of a positive relationship with your sibling through the years?
Yeah, it's pretty well established that people with friendships live longer, happier, healthier lives. In other words, one's social network is very important, and good, nurturing social networks can help somebody in a lot of ways. The corollary is, of course, having good relationships with one's siblings can also then lead to happier, healthier lives. There are often times when families are forced to get together, either by at a funeral, but also at a wedding or other family events, holidays, and if one can get along better with one's siblings, it's going to make that better, that time better. But I think even more importantly, it's a legacy of what you're handing off to the next generation. If you're not close with your siblings, you put at risk your children not being at close with each other, and those children being cut off from their first cousins and other family members.
We're talking to Jeff Greif, professor at the University of Maryland School of Social Work, author of the book Adult Sibling Relationships. We're talking about how to maintain or rebuild good relationships with our brothers and sisters. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you feel like you have a good relationship with your siblings, if any? Do you feel like it takes some work to keep up that contact? Are you do you live in the same town or across the country from each other? What's helped to strengthen your relationship over the years? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@wpr.org. We'll pick up the conversation, maybe hear from you, coming up on Central Time. We're talking to Jeff Greif, professor at the University of Maryland School of Social Work, author of the book Adult Sibling Relationships. We're talking about sibling relationships and how we can create stronger bonds with our sisters and brothers as adults. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you and your siblings best friends? How has your relationship changed when you were kids? Were there obstacles to overcome over the years? Did you overcome those, or are things still tricky? Call 800-642-1234 or email ideas@wpr.org. To your calls now, Ricky is with us in Mosinee. Ricky, hi.
Hi.
What'd you want to tell us about?
All right, well, you asked about circumstances that altered sibling relationships. Well, when I was 10 years old, my sister and I lost our father to a sporadic blood clot. God bless his soul. But his passing was very abrupt, and it sort of drove a nail in between us because I lost my father figure while she kept our mother in her life. And so for her to have that role model always above her, I always felt sort of secluded, you know. And so I never understood how to really patch my way to her because I didn't have a father to look up to us while she had a mother to role model herself as to. So as far as like having a sibling relationship, we have a very good quality relationship, I believe. But I mean, I live in Oshkosh, Wisconsin, and she lives in Eau Claire, so it's hard to see each other unless, like you said, you come together for a wedding or a funeral and it's something like that. I don't know. It's difficult.
Ricky, thanks a lot for that call. Jeff, let's, and I'm very sorry for that loss at an early age.
Yeah.
Ricky, thanks for sharing that story with us. Jeff, can you talk about that when siblings go through a traumatic event like that at a young age together? It might bring them together. It might create difficulties, as Ricky says.
Right. Yeah. No, I'm also sorry, Ricky, for the loss. And yes, it can certainly split apart families. It can pull families together. The good thing about a long life is that, and maybe I'm being overly optimistic here, there are always chances to repair relationships, if not perhaps with a mother and sister, then with maybe finding other people in one's life to whom one can be close. So my, you know, hope would be that, Ricky, you would continue to look for connections to other people that can be meaningful and figure out somewhere to place or mourn the loss of the relationship that you may or may not be able to get from your mother, but I think specifically with your sister. So I would encourage you to continue on that path, and the fact that you called is an indication that you're willing to reach out to try and get somebody else in your life and get some help for yourself.
Ricky, thanks a lot. Hope that helps. We'll go next to John on the line in Madison. John, hi.
Hi. There are four kids in my family. We're all adults now. One of the kids was our dad's favorite, which was always fun, until our dad died and left most of his inheritance to that one favorite. And then it wasn't funny anymore. And, you know, we felt awful crass, you know, having this division come up just over money, but because we were always close beforehand. But it happened, and I don't know. Parents shouldn't do that when they write their wills.
John, thanks a lot for that call. Sorry about that difficulty in your family. This is probably not the only family this has happened in, Jeff.
Right, right. This is something that when you speak to people that have struggles with their siblings, and when we interviewed social workers and psychologists that were treating these situations where siblings were struggling, of course, a lot of it was around favoritism. A lot of it was around estate planning and how sometimes siblings knew in advance that they were cut out or reduced in a will, and sometimes they did not find out until after the will was read at their parents' death. So estate issues come up a lot when siblings don't get along. There are also some promises maybe that a dying parent might make to a son, saying, "I've always wanted you to have this piece of art," and then in comes the daughter 2 days later, and the parent says the same thing to that to the daughter, and the parent may not be of sound mind and body. In John's case, it seems to have been a continuation of other issues that were there. And of course, one option, which I don't know if that's ever going to happen, is for the sibling that got the most money to decide to split it up and not continue a legacy of favoritism through the next generations.
John, thanks for that call. We're talking about sibling relationships with Jeff Greif from the University of Maryland School of Social Work. You can join in at 800-642-1234. We have Joe with us now in Western Wisconsin. Joe, hi.
Afternoon. Hey, thanks for taking the call up. So my question really revolves rather currently around some of the politics of the world. And me personally, I wouldn't share my table with someone who is like super unkind or has horribly different political affiliations or perspectives than I do, or might be spewing hate or unkindness on Facebook. But yet the world says blood is thicker than water. We need to be family and we need to stick together. I find it continually challenging today, especially with social media and people's thoughts and opinions being so public, to navigate that line between, do I share the table with a sibling that I don't particularly care for very much? Maybe they don't care for me as well.
Joe, I want to jump in. Jeff, thanks a lot for that call. Jeff, navigating political social differences among siblings.
Yeah. This came up especially around October and November of 2016, as you can imagine, and that's a very common reaction both about siblings and about friendships in general. And of course, you can more easily drop your friends than you can drop your siblings out of your life. One of the differences in the relationships. One of the things to think about is if it's with siblings, is to sort of make an agreement up front. When we get together for Thanksgiving, let's agree to not talk about this and try and separate that out. Now, whether or not anybody can do that, depending upon what is being said, if there are issues being raised of sexism or racism or, you know, fill in the rest, it may be, from an ethical or moral point of view, impossible. So one's going to have to pick and choose one's battle. But if a sibling can decide that I really want to try and preserve this for the good of my own parents and the good of my family, and I'm going to have to learn to ignore or not talk about this topic, but that's such a personal decision that it's hard to sit here in Baltimore and, you know, say anything more about that.
Joe, thanks a lot for the call. Good luck navigating that with your family. We go next to Jane in La Crosse. Jane, hi.
Hi. Yeah, this is so deep because, you know, there's so much that could be said. I come from a family of seven children. I was the middle oldest girl, and so ended up being kind of the matriarch of my family because there was alcoholism in my family. My youngest sister and I, who I helped raise, we've had a lot of contention in our relationship, and I'm 64 and she is now 59. So the cool thing is we went on our first, long road trip to pick up her son just last October. And for us to be in a car for even an hour used to be impossible. And we decided to do this trip because we could feel that we'd been on good track for a while. And honest to God, we went on this whole trip that lasted us like 6 days. And even with her son in the car, I don't know how we did it, but we have crossed that. I think we just decided life is too short. And that is where we are really great. And the rest of our family, we lost a couple brothers really early on. And when you come from a family of alcoholism, I think as children and siblings, you kind of raise yourself.
Jane, I have to jump in because we're very close to being out of time. Thank you so much. I'm glad that worked out with your sister. Jeff, just less than a minute left. A quick thought to embrace that life's too
note.
Short.
That's a great positive note. A lot of the siblings we talked to when a parent died or when something happened, they just said, look, you're all I have left, and I'm going to have to figure out what to do with it. I can't say anything more about that because it's such a personal decision. But at some point, you're going to have to figure out what's the narrative around your story and around the story for your children and grandchildren that you want to write about your family.
We'll leave it there. Jeff, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much. It was wonderful.
That's Jeff Greif, professor at the University of Maryland School of Social Work. He's the author of 14 books, including the book Adult Sibling Relationships. He joined us to talk about maintaining sibling relationships as an adult. Still time for you to share your story about you and your siblings. You can post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Let us know maybe if you had that moment like Jane did, where you got it back together, had that fun road trip, and worked things out for the future. You can also tweet us at Central Time WPR and let us know there.